Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC. And this is the best animated shows ever. So far. Where we watch, discuss, and rank every animated show ever, eventually. And Rob joins us back here today.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm Korg. Hi, I'm Korg. I'm Rob.
So good. I want a Korg movie. Korg and the Silver Surfer team up. I would watch that. I mean, just put Korg in anything and I would watch it.
I mean, fun fact, if memory serves, and I could be wrong here, I thought the Silver Surfer was with the Hulk in the Planet Hulk comic book storyline where he meets, like, all of the other people on that planet.
You might be right. I thought he was. I read that.
If not, he ends up, he does end up on that planet. Yeah, so not in the movie because they didn't have the rights yet. But. Just saying.
We also have Atticus. My son is with me today. So if you hear weird squeaking noises in the background, it's just the sounds of a child. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
I'm just that excited about Silver Surfer. It's me.
If you hear cooing sounds, it's all coming from Rob.
Yes.
We are here to discuss the origin of the Silver Surfer episode 2. Wait, no. Silver Surfer episode 2. The origin of the Silver Surfer part 2. But before we get into it, I wanted to talk just a little tiny bit about behind-the-scenes stuff. So this show is kind of a part of the greater Marvel animated universe. That's where we kind of screwed up, MC, because we were trying to watch connected shows together. And according to the Marvel Animated Universe wiki page, this is part of the universe, which includes X-Men, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, The Incredible Hulk, Silver Surfer, Spider-Man Unlimited, and The Avengers United They Stand.
Were we doing that with the Marvel ones? I thought that was just the DC.
Well, I didn't think that the Marvel universe was as connected, so I didn't think it mattered. But it turns out they're technically connected, but not really. Or for this show in particular. Like, it doesn't actually have, like, any connections that matter. It sounds like in season 2 they were going to build up more connections between this and the rest of the Marvel shows. But as it stands, there's not really much we have to worry about. So it's okay.
It's so interesting. Sorry, I have my comic book hat on. And I'm like, it's so interesting because the Fantastic Four are integral to the Silver Surfer's comic book origins, but they found a workaround in this episode, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, it's weird. Because even I know that. Even I know that the Fantastic Four are supposed to be there. The other thing I want to talk about, though, is on the voice actor front, I just want to talk about Silver Surfer, because one thing that's interesting about this show is that a lot of the voice acting in this show is just the Silver Surfer talking to himself as he flies around space. It really gave me a feel, and Rob, you can attest to this, I'm sure, it gave me a feel of old comic books where you would have a lot of internal monologuing from the characters and then kind of omnipresent monologuing from, you know, basically the editor telling you what's going on in the story. And this kind of does that with Silver Surfer and with the Watcher giving voiceovers.
Yeah, it's one of the things that they've sort of combined in modern comic books. Internal monologue happens in caption boxes now, where if you go back, you would have both an internal monologue using thought bubbles don't really exist anymore in modern comics, which is kind of crazy. But it used to be an internal monologue was used with thought bubbles. And then you also had the omniscient narrator, which would be in caption boxes, which literally would just tell you what's happening in the drawing. You know, because it would say, like, and the surfer calls his board to him and preparing to take flight. But it's just in their head. It's of course, it's like a book. So you have a narrator in addition to the pictures, and the pictures accompany the narration. So you could do this, like, fantastic prose, which we don't get now. Now in comic books, it's just straight, here's the action. And I'm not going to say that it's necessarily better or worse for it, but you don't get much of the narrator anymore.
I haven't read many like recent like comic books. The narration and like the inner monologue, are they like in the caption boxes, are they even different colors, like, or are they the same color?
So the way like the Flash television show is kind of a great example of this, where every single episode starts with "My name is Barry Allen and I'm the fastest man alive." That's how a lot of comic books have been, we'll say, really since like the 90s and certainly into the 2000s and into today, is you'll take a specific character often, and that character will be your narrator for that episode. So if you picture like your favorite television show that's an ensemble show with a cast, and they're like Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and we're going to follow Sisko for this episode. So all of the omniscient narrator is actually Sisko.
And that episode is called In the Pale Moonlight, and it's very, 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 very good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you'll see they'll usually do something to the text box, either use colors that are indicative of the character, or sometimes it'll even have like a little emblem in the corner of the box. There'll be something to tell you that that's their you know,
that's nice
sort of thought that's... bubble. Or in the case of a lot of the Flash comics, it's every issue starts with "My name is Wally West, my name is Barry Allen, and I'm the fastest man alive." And so it's almost, you know, one of these "and here's what happened to me today" kind of thing.
You'll
but they
never
sort of
guess how I got into this situation.
Exactly.
You saying the emblems reminded me. That's what I've seen most, I think, in recent comics, both in like X-Men stuff and like Batman family stuff, I feel like, is I've seen the thing where they do, you know, Robin's got a red text box that's got the little R in the corner.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But instead of thought bubbles clogging up the artwork.
The thought bubbles, though, I think, I don't know. I think that's probably a good shift in general, but as a little kid, like, thought bubbles made so much sense to me. Like,
oh yeah, like,
just visually, like, oh, this is like they're saying it, but in their head. I get it.
But the thought bubbles, more often than not, are them narrating the thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Just
which
like
is
older.
Exactly what this show does, where it just has Silver Surfer wandering around space going, "I'm wandering around space." And he finds a planet, and he's like, "This planet is one I've just found."
But that also harkens back to older cartoons. Like, it's a thing that we sort of lost in the age of, which came out actually earlier than this show, but like Batman the Animated Series you don't hear like, "If I can just reach my utility belt," you know, like, you don't get that. You just see him struggling and then he pulls a lockpick out of his glove or whatever. This harkened back to
that you go pick an episode of the Batman Animated Series and record a Batman internal monologue track to lay over it, because I would watch that.
It's going to be very dirty.
Oh God, I thought I liked Batman, but he's terrible.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Pick one with a lot of Catwoman, Selina Kyle. You just make it.
I thought
real
you were
going to
say Batgirl, and I was like, no, the DC movie universe already did that. It was awful.
Yes, they did. Or just very racist, because he is a rich white man who is like, "I have all of this money and need to solve basic crime in this large city. What am I going to do? I know. I will spend millions and millions of dollars on my own cool car and my own cool stuff so I can run around and punch people in the face.
I will punch crime.
I will punch crime." And then,
hey, I want to make a shirt. MC, remind me to make a shirt that just says "punch crime."
Punch crime.
Okay.
In like a super chunky comic book font.
Yeah.
And also, my suggestion.
Remind me.
Of a shirt that just says "Barker" in both English and Japanese.
I forget what the joke was with that. I remember you explaining it, and I was really confused.
Barker, it is the Japanese word for like stupid, silly, foolish. Okay. Yeah. I just want to walk around with a shirt that's announcing that I'm stupid on it.
Got it. Yeah, we'll make both of those. Hey, go check my Twitter page, and there'll probably be links to find where you can buy those. All of this story, because I want to talk about Paul Assiembright. This is the problem, is I don't try saying the names out loud before we go to record, and then I'm like, Paul, got it. P-A-U-L, Paul, cool. Paul, and then I read the last name, E-S-S-I-E... M-B-R-E.
Asimber?
Asimber? Asimbre? Anyway.
Paul.
Paul's the voice of the Silver Surfer. he also plays Swordsman on the Avengers United They Stand. Rob, can you give me two sentences on Swordsman?
The Swordsman was the Swordsman either trained Hawkeye or is somebody who trained with Hawkeye back in his Circus of Crime days.
Okay. Does he just use also, swords?
He's just really good with the sword. He likes the swords, and
it's like Silver Surfer. Paul Asimbre. Listen, Paul Asimbre was like, my last name's a little difficult to pronounce. It's confusing for people, so I'm only gonna play characters with very straightforward names. Silver Surfer is silver, and he rides a surfboard. Swordsman is a man, and he uses swords. Done. End of story.
That's it.
IMDb lists a couple of things before this, but according to the Marvel Anniverse Universe, Marvel Animated Universe Wiki page. This was his first acting role, which is kind of nuts. Like the title character in a show. Good job, Paul Asimbre. Wanted to give him a quick shout out because most of the voices that we hear in this show is good old Paul.
That's true. Yeah. Most of the voices is in he does most of the characters or just that the majority of the dialogue in the show is Silver Surfer internal monologue.
It's Silver Surfer internal monologue.
Which is
a planet. That's strange. There's people on this planet. I guess I'll feed them to Galactus, but I feel a little bit bad about it. Weird.
Yeah, which is indicative, again, it's very reflective, rather, of the comic book.
Yeah.
Like, he's, again, he's such a tragic character. He spends most of his time being mopey.
Let's make a sketch where Silver Surfer and Batman sit in a room together and mope, and it's just silence.
Except Batman's crying into wads of cash.
I was
just imagining that they both grunt every once in a while.
Here's what it is. It's Batman looking all grim and stuff, handing Silver Surfer $100 bills to cry into.
There you go, yeah.
Which the Silver Surfer then uses his transmutation ability to turn into gold. But
or he turns it into an
cry.
Actual tissue and then blows his nose with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about episode two right let's after do. These messages.
Good evening, 003. The following is for your ears only and is classified above top secret by Her Majesty's Secret Service. Less than 24 hours ago, our contact with the We Can Make This Work, probably Podcast Network, intercepted an encrypted audio message sent over social media regarding the upcoming season of Podcasters Assemble, a hype rewatch podcast covering the James Bond films leading up to Bond's 25. According to our intel, Season 1 covered the Marvel Cinematic Universe, while Season 2 focused on the Star Wars Skywalker saga. For this season, the Podcast Network is looking to recruit field operatives from around the world to reminisce about the Daniel Craig Bond movies, Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Skyfall, and Spectre, in a countdown to the latest film in the franchise, No Time to Die. Your primary objective is to infiltrate Podcasters Assemble by recording and uploading your submissions at probablywork.com, utilizing a two-way communications device with a built-in microphone, the latest from QBranch. In addition, MI6 believes that the first episode is going to be an overview of the series as a whole, showcasing everyone's favorite and least favorite Bond movies, Bond actors, Bond villains, secret lairs, cold opens, vehicles, and gadgets from the franchise's history, and more importantly, your background with these films. For a full mission report, go to probablywork.com. The first episode is scheduled for release on March 6th. We're all counting on you, 003.
We've set up new ways that our listeners can interact with us. So Twitter and Instagram have been there for a while. We've got an email account, all that's BaseSFcast. the emails at basesfcast@gmail.com. But now there's a Facebook page. So you can go to facebook.com/basesfcast and you can find the page for the show. And then there's also on that page, there's a button that says join group. We'll probably watch the group more than the page. To get to the group, you do have to know what one of our names are, which if you don't at this point, I'm a little hurt. We also have a YouTube account. If you search BaseSFcast on YouTube, then you'll find the episodes, but on YouTube. I was going to say, but in video format, but it's not really in video format because we don't record our faces. I guess we do record our faces. We're not putting up videos. Anyway, search BaseSFcast on YouTube. And then the final thing is, MC, you want to tell them about the voice messages?
Oh, yeah, that's right. On Anchor, you can actually go onto our podcast and it's a button. It's
yeah.
Just a button that they can press.
It's just a button. It says send voice message.
And you click on that and you can record a little voice message for us. In fact, what we really are looking for is for people to drop in their opinion on the show that we're currently watching. And we will drop a few of those into episode 3.
Yep.
Probably right before we rank the show.
Yeah, I think that's the place to do it. It's kind of as we're wrapping up our thoughts on the show, then we can get a little bit of your thoughts on the show. And the page for that is just anchor.fm/basesfcast. Just whatever website you're on, put basesfcast at the end of it. Unless it's an adult website. Don't do that.
I mean.
That was fun. We went in weird places with that one, which was good, because all I had was like, anyway, this guy's the voice actor.
It's what I do.
I know. I purposely did. I was going to write show notes and be like, this is the structure of how we do things. And I was like, if I do that, Rob's just going to go edit the show notes and make it so it doesn't make any sense. So I'm not going to give him the opportunity.
That's a Geektitude thing. When I am on Geektitude, I edit Joe's intro and outro because he says the same thing. And it's like four lines every single time. So I change it so it's more entertaining. And on Tea Time, I completely derail the show intentionally.
Yes.
We derail our own show all the time.
As exactly. Evidenced by this conversation. Because, MC, this totally is part of the show. We just didn't say we're back yet.
Oh, whoops. We're back.
I'm going to put that in. It's perfect. It's very on brand. All right. Silver Surfer, Episode 2, The Origin of the Silver Surfer, Part 2, originally aired on February 14th, 1998. One thing I think is interesting here is that a lot of the shows we watch MC have a 5-part opening storyline. And it seems like the reason for that is because what they do is they buy up a week's long block of time. So you watch episode 1 on Monday, then 2 on Tuesday.
Mm.
This show has a 3-part intro, and it was just released weekly. Like, last one was February 7th, this one's February 14th. So it's interesting to me that they didn't block this together when they premiered it.
Valentine's Day.
Also, happy Valentine's Day. Bummer. What a romantic episode we get for Valentine's Day.
I was going to say, it was my Ghostbusters 2 quote, Valentine's Day. Bummer.
Hey, I'm going to derail us already. Rob, have you played the Ghostbusters video game by any chance?
Yes. Not the remastered version. Yes.
Okay, cool. That's all I needed. Yeah. they released the remaster for Switch, and I'm like, I kind of want to do that, but
it's fun. Yeah. Okay. You'll by the end you're ready to be done with the game, but it's fine. But if you're a fan, like it's considered pseudo canon as the third movie, because written by Dan Aykroyd, all the original voice cast is back. Cool. So, except Rick Moranis. Yeah.
Now I just have to wait for my small town GameStop to ever get a copy of that game in. Until then, I'll have to pass my time by flying around space and looking for planets for Galactus to consume.
Yes, but only after a very lengthy recap of the first episode by Uatu the Watcher.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about almost 2 minutes long, and then we get the opening credits.
Which, again, I love that music. Like, it's so inappropriate for a kid's cartoon, but it's so dramatic.
So dramatic. Very epic. So, Just to tell you guys, I already got the pop-up that we're running out of time on our Zoom room. That's fine. So Surfer's flying around. He does have wormhole technology. I thought it was just that he went real fast, but he actually uses the power cosmic to, like, make gates for himself and flies around.
Well, I mean, if you're moving faster than the speed of light, are you not effectively bending space-time?
Yes,
that silence, yes. That silence is what we call science.
But here's the thing. Is that what he's doing, or is he creating his own wormholes to travel through? Because those are two different concepts.
Yes, they very much are.
Does he move very fast from point A to B, or does he move instantaneously from point A to B?
I think if he opens his hand and you actually see a wormhole open up, then...
Well, there's this, like, green tunnel thing that happens. Is that just him going into, like, super speed, or is that actually a wormhole?
MC, if you go into a transporter, does it clone you and kill your original, or does it actually move you to a new place?
He is capable... Let's say it this way. He is capable of traveling faster than light and surviving going through a wormhole in order to take him across space. So whichever it is, it's a thing he can do.
Here's the fun thing you don't know, Rob.
But he's sad about it.
He really wants to yell at me about transporters, but we're actually recording a different podcast later today talking about Star Trek. So he can't yell at me about transporters now, because he has to save it for yelling at me about transporters when we're actually talking about Star Trek. And it's torturing.
The Silver Surfer would have been an amazing guest character on either the original or Next Generation. Or Voyager. I don't see him super as a DS9 kind of character, but he's definitely one of those, like, the exploratory.
Enterprise. Yeah.
Yeah. Where, you know,
Enterprise would have been it. Is it IDW that has the Star Trek license? I think. Maybe it's IDW.
Say that again.
Is it IDW that does the Star Trek comics?
It may be. It's jumped around a lot.
Well, whoever does them now loves doing crossovers. So, Rob, get a spec script together and send over, because they've done Transformers. They've done Doctor Who. They've done, I think they did an Alien vs. Predator vs. Star Trek, I think. They've done all kinds of weird crossovers with them.
Yeah, I mean, I know Alien and Predator are over at Dark Horse, and they did a bunch of crossovers, because you got a lot of Predator and Alien with Superman, and there's a Green Lantern Alien crossover book that I really liked. But yeah, you don't see a ton of Silver Surfer crossover with the space properties. But just like here, we're like, because even at the beginning, right, where he's confused about his origins, he's waxing poetic. We get that intro of that interior monologue after we get the Watcher recapping everything, which is where in my notes I brought up. We talked about it last episode of if it would make more sense to actually start here with him waxing poetic and not really knowing about his origins, because it feels like that'd be a strong sort of starting point. I mean, that sort of thing works well in a Star Trek-y universe. But
yeah,
I said that to bring it back around to the start of the episode.
Well, back at the start of the episode.
There we go.
He approaches this, like, planet, and it's full of technology, and he comments on that, and he waxes poetic about this strange planet full of energy, and he enters the space, and all these alarms start going off, and there's these massive guns that are following him, and it's like, we get to see a race of, like, lizard people, I guess?
Mm-hmm. They kind of look like the main bad guy from the Mighty Ducks animated series.
Okay.
Is
that not a common reference point for people?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a while, but I do know exactly who you're talking about.
I believe he's a dragon man named Draconis.
Yeah, so he's Draconis.
What you're saying is Galactus could either use his giant machines to destroy the planet, or he could fire pucks at them.
Yeah, that would be totally effective.
Okay.
I'm putting that on the list for next show, MC, by the way, because I watched the first episode. Oh man, I want to talk about it.
Yeah. So Silver Surfer, he sees this planet. He's like, it's ripe for Galactus to eat this beautiful planet full of people. Let's just send the signal out. Even though I feel kind of conflicted about there being entities on this planet, let's get Galactus here. And the planet decides that, you know what? We don't like that. We're going to fire a big gun at you.
Which does not bother him really in the least. It like interrupts him, but it doesn't hurt him at all. And he's like, you guys realize like this is literally nothing to me. He just like slowly soars by and destroys all of their guns.
Oh, yeah. He blasts through the massive like laser shot that they shoot at him, and then he just destroys all the guns, and he's like, here's Galactus coming. Anyway, thanks, guys.
He's like, and then Galactus flies away.
Yeah, and then Galactus shows up and starts eating the planet, and all the aliens are like, peace, we're out.
But this is super fascinating to me. Do you think they made those aliens look sort of like monster lizard people to make us a little more sympathetic? Because at this point, the Silver Surfer is he's our show's protagonist, but he is not a good guy here. He is the bad guy in this situation. Yeah. But they made the first planet he goes to a planet full of guns.
And like scary lizard monsters. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, man, if this was like a planet of Furbies, we would feel so bad about it. But because they're like weird lizard monsters, our like primate brains are like, no, it's fine. Go ahead and get rid of the weird lizard people. They scare
you. So should it have been Furby people? Like, again, knowing that it's for kids and stuff. But like, if you were to remake it today.
Knowing it's for kids, I don't think you could make it the planet of Furby people. I think that would be too dark for kids to deal with.
Yeah,
I think
go ahead, maybe something in between Furbies and these lizard people.
Well, that's just
might
humans.
Have been
humans are the exact same point.
No, no,
Furbies
no,
and lizard people.
A planet full of baby Yodas.
Oh, don't you dare!
How? What?
Well, they're green, so they're like kind of like they're aliens.
No. They need to be tall. They need to be tall because if they're short. Everyone's gonna be thinking of kids, and that's not good.
They're gonna be short. They're gonna be plump. They're gonna have stubby legs, so they can't really walk anywhere. They kind of have to like waddle sideways to get places.
Ewoks?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's Endor.
Ewoks would work. Yeah.
Or if you want tall people, make it a Planet X, where Groot is from, and so you see all of the Groots come together and hug and say, we are Groot, and then the planet's destroyed.
Oh, that's sad.
See? And there's one, that's and there's so got to be baby Groots mixed in there, and then it's just twigs in outer space. It's kindling. See? That's the emotion. That's what we're supposed to be feeling here.
Yeah.
And we find out that, I think the interpretation is all those guns and that almost armored shell around their planet, because he had to go through all that to be like, oh no, there is actually energy here that we can use.
Yeah.
Like that's all very much there to be I think their protection against Galactus. Because they talk about Galactus having appeared and they knew this day was going to come and the alarms go off. I think that whole thing is our best example of a planet trying to keep out Galactus. Because then even later in the episode, we see them traveling, unless it's the third episode, is we get a shot of them. They're looking for another.
But yeah.
Right. Once they leave, the few survivors are looking for another planet with the resources to help them. So like they're super technologically advanced and thought that they did their best shot of armoring their entire planet, covering it with guns just to try and keep away the Silver Surfer and Galactus, which again is one of these things that's so big of an idea, but they kind of it almost slips under the radar because it's a cartoon.
What I think is also great is they had a backup plan. They literally had a backup plan to get as many people off the planet as possible, and they enact it. So their species survives even if their planet doesn't.
Yeah. Versus like having one rocket where you can send one baby to another planet, Krypton.
Oh, yeah. That was real smart of them.
Hey,
learn from the lizard
people.
Babies
to that planet and a dog.
That's fair.
But well, after the evacuation of this planet and Galactus eating it, we actually see someone else, big bad guy, show up.
I can't believe this. It blew my mind. I'm just watching it like, yeah, this is a pretty cool cartoon. It's got Galactus, it's got Silver Surfer. Hey, the Kree and the Skrull are here. Uatu's here. This is pretty cool. And then freaking Thanos shows up.
What? Yeah. Oh.
Huh.
That was hilarious.
Well, that was like perfect timing.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I can't hear you yet, MC.
How about there now?
Yep.
Okay. That was hilarious timing.
You were saying, freaking Thanos.
Freaking Thanos shows up and just Infinity Gauntlet snaps our Zoom meeting out of existence right in the middle of me being excited about Thanos showing up.
Can we just take a second and talk about his ship and its look?
The big old skull ship flying through flying through space.
But when you see it side on, it's all like pipes and cylinders and weird geometries. It's like super weird, and all the jets are like green.
It's a cool looking design.
It's all purple.
Is this? Rob, you may not know this because this may just be a thing for the cartoon.
Oh, hang on.
Babies don't like Thanos.
So peacefully.
He doesn't like Thanos. He's not a fan. My question is that ship supposed to be like nowhere? Is that ship supposed to be actually the head of something, or is it just a ship that looks like a head?
I like that idea. I like the idea that he's actually flying around in the skull of a celestial. That would speak a lot to Thanos' ability. It is not... it's clearly designed for the cartoon to show you he's a bad guy. It's a little reminiscent of in Infinity Gauntlet, he creates sort of this floating island thing in space that has skulls all over it, because unlike in this television show, and I know it's sort of the reveal at the end, so I guess, I don't know, am I able to say it? Do we spoil towards the end? Where we find out that it is not actually Mistress Death, who is normally who he is in love with in the comic book, because they couldn't, I imagine, use death. I imagine that was standards and practices saying you can't have a character that literally worships death and is in love with death.
Yeah.
So they make it Lady Chaos instead.
Yeah.
But in the comic books, he builds like this giant planet that has sort of their thrones on it. It's got skulls all over it. So skulls are certainly a thing that are around Thanos, but his ship, known as Sanctuary, is just a normal looking ship. He either has that or a giant chair that he travels around in, like Metron from DC's New Gods.
Can I say it's kind of weird that they didn't bring up that part of his character at all in the movies?
His love of death? No. Yeah. So what they did in the films, I think, is they didn't want to deal with, or yet they didn't want to deal with the idea of aspects of the universe taking on physical form. We might get some of that with Doctor Strange at some point. The idea of characters like Infinity or Eternity or Death or Master Chaos and Lord Order, Mistress Love and Master Hate, or there's all these beings that were either in Doctor Strange or in, I think, the Quasar comic books, where there are aspects of the universe that take on physical form through, oh man, I'm digging deep in my comic book knowledge here. It's known as the dimension of something. There's actually like a dimension from which they pull their physical form so they can appear and not drive people insane and take physical form.
Yeah, so they don't bring up any of that. And that's one of the big motivating factors in the comic books for him to wanting to destroy half the population as well. He's in love with death, and he wants...
Mm-hmm. He wants
They tease it at the end of Avengers when they say to fight the Avengers is to court death. And we see him turn and smile. That's our first reveal of Thanos. And I lost it because he's, I think, one of my favorite comic book characters of all time. And this interpretation is not exact, but closer than most cartoons get, where he's just another big, angry bad guy, where here he's far more of a philosophical kind of character. I will say when we see him, does he come across as orgasmic to you guys?
Oh, my gosh. He is just... Never mind. I forgot we were trying to keep this show kind of family friendly, so I'm going to just pull back on all the conversations I was going to make.
He really likes the things that he's watching. We'll say that. The voice actor is really giving it, sort of that Shakespearean thing.
He just keeps giving it. He's giving it to, and he's giving it and giving it, and he just won't stop giving it.
Well, he's getting it. I think he's getting it, is what it sounds like.
He really gets it.
I think there might have been someone in the room with him when he was doing his lines.
It was Lady Chaos. It was right over there.
Right. And in the comic books, he is in love with Mistress Death, and in order to try and win her favor, he makes her a promise that he will kill half of all living creatures in the universe because there are more people alive now than have ever died, and that is a cosmic imbalance. And then there's an issue of the Silver Surfer. If you guys remember last time, I talked about how Infinity Gauntlet and Silver Surfer are sort of two parts of the same storyline, mm-hmm. right? There is the Infinity Gauntlet, which you can buy as a trade, but then the issues of Silver Surfer served as sort of the in-between stories. And leading up to Infinity Gauntlet, he encounters Thanos, who gives him this big speech, which they ended up using for the movie, which is the speech of we have to control the universe growing out of control, and so we have to go and take out half of all life. And it's up for debate in the comic book sort of community whether he actually really means that, or more likely he's using that argument just to try and get the Silver Surfer off of his back. And then in the movie they make that actually his thing. Really, he wanted to do it to win a girl that doesn't like him. Like, that's always his whole thing, is he is in love with this physical embodiment of death who will not give him the time of day. And so he goes and commits genocide over and over again to try and appease his mistress, Death. And in here, we definitely get the idea that he really likes whoever it is he's talking to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of this episode is Thanos... it's not quite monologuing because he's clearly talking to someone and he's like acting as if they're talking back to him. Like, he'll respond, be like, "Oh, I agree." But it's kind of weird how that plays out. And I guess it just serves to make him seem like he's totally nuts is mostly the impact of the way that he converses with Lady Chaos in this.
Again, it's very weird for a kid's cartoon.
Yeah. So he's observing, and what he sees Silver Surfer. Silver Surfer goes to Galactus, and they have a conversation about, like, hey, Galactus, why do I do this? Why do I help you, like, slaughter millions of people? And Galactus is like, don't worry
Galactus is like, I never have I felt fed so well since you joined me. Which leads into the, why do we do this?
why do you eat people, and why do I help you eat people?
One of my notes is I have Galactus's sounds like me after a huge dump. That's one of mine, because he's just like,
well, I think that's the only reason that he doesn't like punish the Surfer further for asking questions, because he's so like full that he's just like, I can't deal with this right now, just listen, you're asking a lot of questions, just go find me another planet, I'm gonna take a nap real quick.
He's like, you're so restless and always like asking questions. And then he was, there's a line in here. He says, I thought, unlike myself, lesser beings could be content.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, that is like such a BS sort of line for like this massive godlike creature to have, because no one's ever content, ever.
He's basically saying, like, only I could have problems. No one else in the universe could possibly have problems.
But it's an insight into his character, though. It's an insight into his... Because they paint him as this person who just doesn't care because he doesn't pay attention. Because he just assumes he's above it all.
Yeah.
And I find that... I actually find that kind of interesting. It's sort of a... he's the adult, right? Surrounded by kids. So if you're a kid watching this, it's the parents who are like, you're a kid, your opinion doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, you can't actually have problems. You're not actually upset about this. because it's not a problem.
Hey, Rob, way to make this make me sad again. Good job, buddy.
I'm peeling back the layers.
I'm peeling back the layers.
you guys really want to be sad? Galactus yes. hasn't even finished eating this planet yet, and he sends the Silver Surfer off to find another planet yep. because he knows as soon as he's done with this planet, he's going to get hungry again.
Yeah, never yeah. have I been so satiated. But also, I could really go for a Big Mac, so if you want to just do like... A quick run, that'd be great. Maybe pick up some talkies along the way. That'd be great.
And I don't know if it's in this scene. It's a note I actually have for the third episode, but it's that Galactus sure does laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Well, like whenever he's talking to the Silver Surfer, no, he laughs way, like, let's put it this way. He doesn't laugh in the comic books. He's this giant godlike being, and in this one he's always like, oh, you.
Yeah,
oh, Silver Surfer. Oh, come on.
He's chuckling at the Silver Surfer. Oh, well, at the expense of the Silver Surfer, essentially.
Yeah. But and just it's weird how much he laughs. Like, it's, I don't know. If that's just to make him yeah. seem more evil, I guess.
I think, yeah, it's just an evil guy thing.
Yeah. Well, we get our second scene with Thanos right after the conversation with Galactus. Yeah. And he causes a supernova to happen?
So Thanos' plot here is he's like, man, Lady Chaos, check out Galactus. If we could control Galactus' power, then we'd be unstoppable. And I can't beat Galactus right now, but, oh man, look at that Silver Surfer guy. I can totally beat that Silver Surfer guy, easy peasy. And if anyone's going to know Galactus' weaknesses, it's him. So zap, and he zaps Silver Surfer and sends him blowing away like a speck of cosmic dust. And he wakes up next to a planet, which he's like, oh, sweet, I was just looking for a planet, and then I happen to wake up next to this planet. It's perfect.
Yeah.
I like it. I like that plan, though. It's showing Thanos as a manipulator, because he doesn't ever, like, despite being massively powerful himself, if he can stand to not get his hands dirty, he won't. Like, it's kind of, I guess, sort of a bad guy, you know, a big boss trope. The big bad trope of sending the minions, but he's like, it's not a use of minions here like it is in the movies, we'll also say. Yeah. But it's the idea of I'm going to create a supernova in order to blow you in the direction of this planet that I think can hold you long enough so that I can get to you and act like a good guy to you, like I'm there to help you and save you, and then turn you against your master so that I can try and learn more about both of you. And I dig that sort of manipulation by Thanos.
Yeah, and essentially when the Silver Surfer wakes up after being blown off into space, essentially, near this planet, he flies down to the planet and he's like, oh, it's so full of life and there's no sun around here and all this other stuff. I started getting red flags right then. Yeah. I'm like, I think I know what this is leading to, but let's keep watching it. And in the end, I was heading in the right direction. It is this planet is what I think it is. But we can come to that when it's revealed later. But essentially, this planet is a trap for the Silver Surfer. So. Yeah.
Well, the planet starts fighting back against him, right? Like, he's just cruising yeah. around checking out, and suddenly, like, lava starts shooting up at him and stuff.
Yeah, as soon as he arrives, the planet essentially says no escape, and then starts firing volcanoes at the Silver Surfer. There's a lot of terraforming in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
On this
Which,
planet.
Again, are... If you're a comic book geek at the time, or now a viewer of the MCU, these are them throwing big hints at you.
Yeah.
And again, just not to fall back on it, also feels kind of Star Trek-y.
Oh, yeah. Definitely feels... I reckon this is, out of the three that I watched, this is the most Star Trek-y one.
I could see Star Trek doing a planet like this. I cannot think of one where they have, but it would not feel out of place to me entirely. Maybe not quite to this extent, but a planet where like the geology seems to be fighting back against you, like that kind of makes sense. Okay, I'm going to get to it. I didn't see where this was going. I had no idea what was happening. But, like, lava's flying at him. He gets trapped under some rock for a while. And he's like, oh, man, there's, like, a heartbeat sound. Weird. And I was, like, sitting here, again, dumb, sleep-deprived baby brain going, I don't know. What's it going to be? Why is this planet have a heartbeat? What could it possibly be? And then... Well,
we get our third scene with Thanos, and he's doing his talking to the darkness, and we see the Silver Surfer actually get trapped on a monitor, I guess? That's supposed to be one of the eyes of the skull? I'm not sure exactly how that lines up.
Yeah, I didn't really try and place where the monitor was, but it could be the eye. But... Yeah. Basically, the surfer just keeps getting trapped. He gets trapped underground. He gets trapped in, like, a vortex. He gets trapped with some ice. Like, everything on this planet is just trying to trap him over and over and over again until finally a big face shows up. Because it's Ego.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Ego, it's the living planet. Episode 2 of this cartoon is like, what about Thanos and Ego, the living planet? Would you like them in your cartoon?
I mean, yeah, sure. I love it. Yeah, it's great. I'm not sure if, like, this Ego's, like, a big part of, like, the galactic, like, the, like, off-world Marvel universe, isn't it?
Yes, what we call Marvel Cosmic.
Yeah.
Ego is a big player and has played a lot of roles over the years. But yeah, he is not... an elder of the universe, as stated in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. That's them sort of combining multiple story elements. Now, it's possible they've retconned the comic books. This is often what happens, is the movies are loosely based on the comics, and then the comics change to adhere concretely to the movies because they want to bring in that audience without them being confused. But from the 90s, we'll say, in the age when this cartoon comes out, yes, he is a big living planet who can move around at will, and has played several different roles within the Marvel Cosmic Universe.
Yeah.
But he's not Star-Lord's daddy.
No, they've sort of retconned that, and, I'm not sure, is Star-Lord still supposed to be the daddy to those two boys?
Huh?
The Summer Boys?
No, you're thinking of Corsair.
Okay.
Who is one of the Star Jammers.
Okay. There we go. I'm like...
Yeah. So there's Christopher Summers, who was kidnapped by aliens, ended up in the Shi'ar Empire, and became a space pirate, because that's what you do.
Yep.
And the Star-Lord character was another sort of random space character that didn't really exist in the comics for years, until a story called Annihilation. And he is part Spartoy from the planet Spartax. And you find out that his father, correct. You find out his father is a man named Jason, but it's like J'SON, so Jason or whatever, who is the leader of this planet.
So his title is just half, is like almost accurate, if not actually accurate.
It's almost Star Prince. Yeah. But he was just kind of a generic space adventure character, who, again, didn't really have a ton to do until you got to, it was actually a 12 issue Thanos series that led into, I thought it was Annihilation, unless it's Annihilation Conquest, but I thought Annihilation. And that leads into the new Guardians of the Galaxy comic book that became the basis for the television show. Where, I mean, that's, again, that's super, super tangential stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ego's been around for a long time is the main thing you need to know.
Well, here's the big thing. I want more Marvel Galaxy stuff happening.
The cosmic stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, all the cosmic stuff, I don't care if it's movies or TV shows, I want more of it.
After watching this show, I'm like super on board with Marvel Cosmic. Like, give it to me. This is good.
Good. Yes.
So Ego's whole plot, is Ego's plot here that he's lonely?
No.
Doesn't he just ask... No, he just is. His whole thing is like, stop bothering me.
Yeah. So what happens is Silver Surfer gets trapped on Ego.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Thanos' plan. He's going to go there and capture the Silver Surfer. But while that's happening, Galactus is like, oh, I've finished this planet. I'm hungry again. Let's go find the Silver Surfer isn't talking to me. Right. I guess I'll just travel off in this direction for a while.
I'll just wander.
Yeah. And then we cut back to, I'm pretty sure Thanos rocking up on Ego and being like, hey, Silver Surfer, do you want to know who you are and what's going on? This is the planet Ego.
Yeah.
And I've sort of made him capture you.
Well, I think what he's saying here is he doesn't know who Norn Rand is, or that Silver Surfer is Norn Rand yet, right?
Yeah, he doesn't. Okay. No, this is...
But he's saying, basically Thanos is saying, like, I can help you figure out who you are.
Yeah.
Okay. The way that Thanos got defeated here confused me, but now it's starting to make sense. Things are clicking into place. So, basically, he's like, if you help me out, I'm going to help you know who you are. And they rock back and forth with each other. I'm not going to help you. I'm going to help you. I'm not going to help you. And then Thanos, like, zaps Silver Surfer in the brain to find out who he is, right?
Yeah, he goes into his memories, essentially. Okay. I didn't know that was one of Thanos' powers. I didn't know...
I think Thanos... He's one of those great memories. Characters where his powers are whatever you want it to be.
Yes, very much so. He has pretty much any ability that Jim Starlin wanted him to have. The movies super powered him down by just making him, like, really strong, and that's kind of it.
Hey, he's real good at spinning a sword staff thing, though.
I know in like the comic books and stuff, he's actually supposed to like go down to planets and just annihilate armies by himself.
Yeah, his whole thing is in his backstory is he has enhanced himself with both technology and like black magic and pretty much everything. Like he just
Dr. Doom plus.
Yes. And yes. and then some. Yeah, he's Dr. Doom but on a intergalactic scale.
Cosmic Doom.
Cosmic Doom.
Good name.
There we go.
That'd be a good album.
But yeah, so they're like he's able to shoot a beam and enter his memories. Shut up, go with it.
Yeah, essentially that's what we essentially get the subtext, and it's like, oh, it's a void. Why is your memory a void? And it's like, I think Silver Surfer talks about serving Galactus and how that's the only thing that he knows, and then Thanos is like, serving Galactus? I don't need to learn how to serve Galactus. I don't want to serve anyone. And then they have a back and forth for a while before Thanos finds the seal to
he dives back in and they go a layer deeper, and then you hear that boong sound from Inception. And this time Norn Rand has, or Silver Surfer has a bunch of flashbacks to Norn Rand. So for the second time in episode 2, we get a recap of what happened in episode 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
I do like Thanos' reaction, though. I like the idea that he goes in and he's like, I don't know what it is I'm looking at. And we've gotten the impression that this is like this really big... Well, I guess, I don't know. If without knowing who he was ahead of time, how much of a bad guy would you have thought Thanos was at this point? We don't see him hurt anybody. We don't see him just shoot out waves to destroy asteroids in his way. No. We don't see him destroy planets. All we do is see him talk to somebody who's not there and look evil.
Well, and he does fly around in a giant skull. So.
And he flies. But see, that's what I'm saying. Like you have those things for visuals, but there's no contextual reason for you to think that he's, if we can assume he's evil, I guess, but not necessarily powerful.
I mean,
outside of the fact that he doesn't try to actually get into a fight.
Yeah. He does actually, well, he sends the Silver Surfer to Ego to trap him.
With a supernova, and, I suppose. Yeah.
And then...
he's only powerful enough to create supernovas with his finger, so...
So, well, whatever.
When he, and then when he rocks up at Ego, the Silver Surfer's trying to leave, and he hits him with a beam to send him back down to the planet there and get as well. So he does technically attack the Silver Surfer at least twice.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, like the Silver Surfer attacks him, Thanos, from behind, and that's when the memory seal breaks, and we get this whole flashback, and the Silver Surfer being made, and something about Zenla frightens Thanos away. I'm not sure exactly what it is about Zenla.
Yeah, it was this weird moment of like, could I benefit from this planet, or was it that he had been there at some point?
He had been there in the past,
which is, and he's weird.
Like, yeah, it, so yeah, it, I think what happens is Thanos says, "You're from Zenla. I was there eons ago."
Yeah.
So that we don't know how long an eon is to Thanos, and he's says something about facing the shining light of Zenla, like never again can one such as I or something.
Yeah, they're really hinting at something bigger and deeper, but they don't give you a ton of detail there.
Yeah, and the way he's speaking is that Shakespearean sort of speech again, like, and it's like, oh, this is something important that's supposed to be happening right now, and I just don't understand it at this point in the show.
Yeah, but he speaks with Zenla with, like, reverence.
Yeah.
Which, again, builds up this idea of what this planet means.
Yeah, and what it must mean to, I guess, the galaxy, and the people who go there to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, Thanos just is like, peace, and gets out of there because he doesn't want to be around the Silver Surfer. He calls out to my lady, I guess. I think it is.
He says, like, save me, my lady, or something like that, and then gets teleported away. So I don't know if she actually is somehow controlling the teleporter, or...
I don't know. Yeah. But he definitely should have a chin beard right in this scene.
Because he got says wrinkles. M'lady.
Yeah, he says m'lady.
He's got chin wrinkles. Yeah, it's I know. Space version.
It's close.
Thanos, the space nice guy.
God, he is. Well, he's doing everything to try and impress a girl. He thinks he's entitled to her time because look how devoted he is. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, you have no idea. Read Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah. Read it. Read his reactions when she rejects him after he thinks he's done everything humanly possible to make this woman love him, and she still doesn't, and he just is not having it. It's a cosmic level friend zone. which isn't a thing, but Thanos sure thinks it is.
Yeah, you can just be friends. It's not friends, you're just friends. So Ego's like, hey, guess what? I can teleport to you. Goodbye, and fades away.
Well, actually, he says that he's in the Silver Surfer's debt because Thanos was essentially forcing him to trap the Silver Surfer on himself. And he's like, now that I'm free, now Thanos is gone, I can move around again. Peace! And just disappears.
And then, as Surfer flies away, he's realizing that, like, his memories are fading again. So, like, He remembered, but now they're fading away. But he, I guess the difference is now he remembers that he doesn't remember his past.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. He has the knowledge that there were memories that were stolen from him. So he knows that the reason he's been so confused all this time and doesn't remember his past is because of Galactus. And that's all he needs to know.
Gotcha. Okay. That was another thing that like confused me a little bit. Cause I'm like, he gets his memories back. And then next episode, spoilers, he gets his memories back again. And so it's like, wait, but where did they go in between?
But yeah, he, at this point, he's like, I gotta find my master. I gotta go find Galactus. And he has like some memories, I guess, of like being in love and some other stuff.
I think he just has vague memories, but nothing. Yeah. All the specifics are gone again.
But yeah, he sort of pops out and goes to find Galactus, and Thanos is like, "I failed you."
Oh yeah, so we get Thanos and Lady Chaos, and we see that she's a statue. But then you see Silver Surfer, and he's trying to find...
Not even a cool statue.
He's trying to find...
Sorry, I'm just saying, Lady Chaos looks dumb. Mistress Death looks awesome. Yeah. It's a woman's body in a robe with a skull face and...
I'm going to read straight from the fandom wiki here, because the way they put it is good. Silver Surfer passes by a ring planet. He then goes by a large gas giant. He flies through an asteroid belt. Then he flies around and he's like, "Hey Galactus, what's up? Check it out. I found a planet with more life energy than any planet before." And then you look down, and what is that? It's Earth.
Well, actually what happens is what happens. No, because that all happens, but right before Earth is revealed, Galactus is like, "Harold, you failed me." He's berating the Silver Surfer, and like this whole scene between them where they're fighting, and the Silver Surfer wants his memories back, and Galactus is like demeaning him and stuff, and he's like, "I found this planet by myself, and it's got more life than anything." Yeah. And there's the tubes are already getting thrown down to this planet, and then it zooms out, and that's when you realize it's Earth.
Dun, 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 dun.
I'm just saying.
Dun, 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 dun. Let's see. Best and worst. Worst first. I'm gonna go first this time. My worst thing was the way that Thanos was defeated, because I don't know, Thanos like heard the word Zen Law and was like, "No," and ran away. And that was silly to me. Why is this run away? Like, yeah. Everything was going exactly to plan. And then he's like, "The shining light of Zen Law." Like, was there an physical thing, or was he just scared?
He was scared because the Silver Surfer knows that this planet exists. It's kind of weird. Guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seemed a little silly to me. Rob, what do you got for your worst?
Lady Chaos. Should have been Mistress Death. And that statue is dumb.
No, that was mine as well.
It was a standards and practices thing. That was something I'd read on this, is that because of that, they couldn't do Lady Death, because that...
And I understand, but I still don't care. It's still dumb.
This show has, like, planet-wide extinction-level events being enacted by a sentient being on a regular basis, and by the way, he's being aided by our hero. But we can't say Death.
Yeah, it's the same way the wave in episode one sort of makes the Kree and Skrull ships disappear rather than explode.
Yeah.
MC, what about you?
I agree with Rob. It should have been Lady Death. It was Lady Chaos. And I think the whole talking to a statue thing, making Thanos seem a bit crazy, was a bit weird as well. But
yeah. I mean, I feel like that served a purpose, and at least that you're like, is this guy actually hearing a voice, or is he just kind of lost it? But it's a little weird. Because if I remember right, Rob, Lady Death kind of does the same thing to him in Infinity Gauntlet, where she doesn't really say much, but she's actually there. She's just, like, refusing to talk to him.
She never speaks. Yeah. That's a recent retcon that Lady Death actually talks.
How about...
I won't get into it, but yeah, kind of a recent thing.
How about best MC?
Oh, I'm trying to think if the best thing in this episode was Thanos' ship or Ego turning up. I'm going to go with the ship, actually. It just was like a really weird, cool design, and it was like all purple and green.
Yep.
I really like purple and green.
That's because you're a supervillain.
That's
or
true.
Or a Skrull.
Well, Skrulls are always supervillains, Rob. And if you make a movie where they're not supervillains, it's because you're just trying to appease to PC culture or something.
You're ignoring the history of Clert, the Super Skrull. We won't get into it. Please continue.
What was your best thing?
I'm gonna let somebody else take Ego. I'm actually gonna say, if you were gonna do an origin story without the Fantastic Four and Alicia Masters and the way the Silver Surfer rebels using Earth, I love that it's Thanos that reveals to him. I love this idea. And I don't know if the show really tackles it, but the idea of Thanos having at least that sort of in his pocket, that mm-hmm. the Silver Surfer owes him the greatest debt of anyone, because it was Thanos that allowed him to realize what had happened to him. And I think that's huge. I think if you were going to redo it without the Fantastic Four in there, having Thanos be the one to do it, even if sort of by accident or that's not exactly what he was wanting to do, I love that twist.
Yeah.
Knowing those two characters.
Yeah.
Seeing Thanos accidentally set in motion the redemption is really cool. It's me. My best thing actually was basically connected to yours, MCU. For mine, I just had the visuals in general for this episode. Like, Galactus' ship obviously was in last episode as well, but his ship, Thanos' ship, the visuals of the planet destruction, it just all looks really, really good, both in terms of like concept design and execution. I think this show is just absolutely gorgeous. And I don't remember if this episode had a lot of it, but another thing that I love specifically about this show is that they do Kirby Crackle all over the place in space.
Yes.
Like, space
yes.
is not black.
I have that as a note for episode 3, yeah. is the Kirby dots.
Space is not black. Yeah. It's colorful with the Kirby dots all over the place, and I think that's super, super cool. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. That is it for episode 2. So we will return with Silver Surfer episode 3, The Origin of Silver Surfer Part 3 next time. Until then, don't change the channel.
Thanks for listening to the best animated shows ever so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFcast or email us at BaseSFcast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFcast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.